Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Quote graphics are used a lot in social media, especially in college football media. The funny thing about quote graphics, they don't always tell you the whole story. What do we mean by that? We'll talk about it here in just a minute. But welcome in to The Hard Count, the People's College Football Show, baby. It is Wednesday, May 1st. New month, 2024, the last May 1st, 2024, on the face of the planet. So we're glad that you're spending it with us. We have a ton to jump into. I tweeted it out last night. It is May 1st, as I mentioned now, I think for three times on this live show. And we're going to fill an hour-long show talking strictly college football. Best sport on the face of the planet. And I think that's a pretty good mic drop moment for us to jump into this. We got portal latest here talking about some guys that are making some buzzer beater kind of entries. Now keep your head on a swivel. Just because you didn't see the Hayes Fawcett graphic or the On3 graphic pop up last night about so-and-so intends to enter or so-and-so's name is officially in there, I would keep an eye on that thing until Thursday, because you had until last night to submit your paperwork. But somebody may have submitted their paperwork last night, not told anybody, and then you're keeping an eye on the portal and someone's name pops up in there on Thursday, because compliance has about 48 hours to submit those names or get them into the portal. So keep your head in the swivel. Portal season is still in full effect. Now, you don't have to commit by last night, obviously, but still some commitments have been made and some recruitments are starting to take shape. Put out a question on my Twitter page and ask y'all, college football is better when blank is good. Got a myriad of different responses. To keep it a buck, a lot of y'all were true and good fans and just said your favorite team. We saw everything from UConn to Virginia Tech to Ohio State to Nebraska to Tennessee. We're going to do our best to unpack those answers in a little bit more of a macro format, so stay tuned for that. A lot of good responses from y'all. College football's best beefs. And I'm not just talking like, oh, we don't really get along kind of beef. I'm talking like USDA approved sirloin, grass-fed Wagyu kind of beef. Like that's what I want to talk about, because if you've been keeping a little bit of peripheral vision to what's going on in the hip-hop world, Drake and Kendrick right now are just sending shots back and forth, and we are all the beneficiaries of that because we're getting some great hits out of it. Also got some AI Tupac. I'm getting off track, but that got me thinking, what are the best beefs in college football? Got a couple of them that I want to unpack. Specific criteria for that. I'm not talking rivalries. So like Michigan, Ohio State, do they have beef? Of course, but that doesn't make this list because that's kind of a given. I'm talking like strictly vibes and we really don't like you kind of vibes, kind of beef, if you will. Oregon's offense, they're going to roll. Spoiler, they're going to roll in 2024. Dylan Gabriel's the new quarterback. Some new pieces offensively, doesn't matter. They're going to score a lot of points. They're going to be, I think, one of the best units in the country when it comes to that side of the ball. I'll unpack why with a little bit of help from our guy Sun Tzu, currently going through The Art of War. It'll make more sense when we get there. And then, as I alluded to at the top of this thing, Colorado, as they always do, being with Coach Prime, being their head coach, they're going to make some news anytime they do anything. So there was an Athletic article that came out yesterday that I want us to unpack in some more depth, because Twitter got all upset by a quote graphic. And as I said at the top of this thing, quote graphics, they don't tell the whole story. They just kind of give you an idea of what the story is about. But I think if you actually read the article, you might have a different reaction to that quote graphic and to that story. It essentially is centered around the players that were cut from Colorado last year and where they are now. And anyway, we'll get into that when we get there. We got some thoughts there. We got some strong opinions. We appreciate y'all being involved with this show, man. I hear from a lot of y'all on Instagram and on Twitter at Judy Pakel, sending me topic ideas or sending me questions or sending me just your opinion on segments we did. Thank you for that. This is a show, yes, we get to do it for a job, which is still hilarious to me, but we get to have y'all a part of it, which makes it a college football community. So if you want to be a part of that community, hit subscribe to the channel, follow me on the socials, and away we go, baby. So let's jump right into it now. The transfer portal is still buzzing. The window has closed, but there are still some names that are going to pop up in there within the next 48 hours. One of the big names that popped up or announced they were going to pop up in there as of, I think, 24 hours ago was Peyton Woodyard. We mentioned him on yesterday's show. He is a four-star safety from the class of 2024, early enrolled at Bama. Obviously, he committed to Nick Saban, wanted to go play DB for Nick Saban, spent the spring at Alabama, and received the Most Improved Freshman Award along with some of his other classmates in that category for Most Improved Freshman. He is now entering the portal. He's in the portal, and he is going to visit Oregon. Now, Steve Wiltfong and Pete Nakos, the authority sources on the transfer portal, have already put in picks for him to end up with the Ducks. This makes a lot of sense. Peyton Woodyard, as we mentioned yesterday, he's from Southern California, so he's getting back closer to home if he ends up going to Oregon. And also, he can't transfer within the SEC because Peyton Woodyard, during his recruitment, had committed to Georgia and then flipped to Alabama. He could commit to Georgia or another SEC school, but he'd have to sit out a whole season. So if he goes to Oregon, he plays early, he plays under a defensive head coach in Dan Lanning and a great defensive coordinator in Tosh LePoy, would make a lot of sense as well geographically, as we already mentioned. So Peyton Woodyard taking a visit to Oregon, I would expect a commitment out of there if I'm tracking those picks from Pete Nakos and Steve Wiltfong. Derek Harmon, we mentioned him a lot on this show, especially during the segment, because he is one of the most sought-after players in the transfer portal. He's a proven commodity. He's played college football at a high level. You're not taking a gamble. You bring him onto your team. He's from Michigan State, as we've mentioned. 6'5", 320 pounds with real proven production. USC and Colorado are kind of those two schools that are battling back and forth for him. He was going to visit Miami. He's since canceled that visit after his Colorado visit. So if we're reading the tea leaves, that probably bodes well for Colorado. Important to note here, he was in the transfer portal during the winter window. Withdrew, went back to Michigan State. During that winter window, he visited Oregon. Now, Pete Nakos tweeted it out this morning. Hey, keep an eye on Oregon. Keep an eye on the Ducks now. Just because he didn't visit most recently doesn't mean they're not still in the mix. He actually said the opposite of that. They are very much so in the mix. If he goes to USC or Colorado, Derek Harmon, to me, is like a tide-changing kind of player because both those schools are trying to get better and more physical on the defensive line. You go to USC and pair him with Bear Alexander, maybe you're in a better position moving into the Big Ten. If he goes to Colorado, he's going to be, I think, right away the best defensive lineman on that roster and will do a phenomenal job, obviously, trying to bolster the middle of that defense. If he goes to Oregon, to me, he feels a lot more like that missing piece. Like Oregon, let's call a spade here. They're thinking national championship this year. That is their aspirations. I understand it's a new quarterback. I understand they got some new pieces. They are thinking national championship this year. They're thinking Big Ten conference championship this year. Okay, so you add in a guy like a Derek Harmon to go along with Mateo Uiagalelei, who's coming off the edge, Jordan Birch, who's coming off the edge. Feel really good about what you have up front. You got to have it up front in the Big Ten, man. There's no guessing about that. You got to have it, and Derek Harmon would obviously help Oregon have that should he end up committing to the Ducks. Speaking of the Big Ten, man, Washington landed a commitment from Jaden Wayne. 6'6", 245-pound edge, transferring from Miami. He's a top 85 recruit when he came out of high school. This is big for Washington. As I just mentioned, you're moving into a line of scrimmage league. Got to have the players on the line of scrimmage. Jaden Wayne, it didn't work out for him at Miami. Doesn't mean he's not still super talented. Doesn't mean he doesn't make Washington immediately a better football team by being on that roster. So we'll track his progress. This is someone that we originally on the show, I think we even just sort of blindly assumed he would end up back on the West Coast. He's from Washington. He's going to the home state school with the Huskies. Good for Jaden Wayne. Ohio State wide receiver Keon Grays is entering the transfer portal. Four-star wide receiver from the class of 2022. And I always kind of take it with a grain of salt anytime I see a high-profile recruit hitting the portal from a high-profile school, even more specifically from a high-profile position room at that school. Like, I say the same thing about Alabama in that secondary room. Just because you weren't a starter at Alabama and you were a four-star out of high school doesn't mean you can't still be really good and help somebody else in college football. Because what do you know about that wide receiver room at Ohio State? It's stacked with first-round players year in and year out. Okay, so Keon Grays, make no mistake about it, that's a good football player. That four-star billing he had coming out of high school, that's not just like something someone missed on, with Keon Grays. So he's from the state of Arizona. Wouldn't it shock me if some West Coast schools were in play here for him, just guessing? We'll keep an eye on that. That's a good player in the transfer portal. Alabama defensive back, right on cue for our comparison there. Tony Mitchell, 6'2", 205-pound defensive back, four-star in the class of 23. He's got 3 years left of eligibility. Interesting to note here, a lot of schools for him when it came to his recruitment at the high school level were all from the SEC. So common knowledge, whenever a kid jumps in the portal, you say, okay, well, who were the other hats on the table? It was schools like the Auburns of the world, the Texas A&Ms, the Floridas, like schools like that were in the running for him. If he were to transfer to another school within the SEC, he would have to sit out a year. Now, he's got 3 years to burn, so if he wanted to do that, he very much so could, but just something to think about here as we're tracking the recruitment of a one Tony Mitchell. Kendrick Blackshear, linebacker at Texas, previously at Alabama, is entering the transfer portal. This is a guy who transferred from Bama to Texas during that winter window after playing 25 games at Alabama. He is now back in the transfer portal. This is a guy that's from the state of Texas. Same thing as we said with Tony Mitchell is true about Kendrick Blackshear. He cannot transfer to an SEC school and be immediately eligible because he's not a graduate transfer. 6'2". Texas had him listed at 261 on the roster. That's a big boy. I'm curious where they would put him on the defense if he stays playing linebacker. Do you move him to edge? I mean, I don't know where Kendrick Blackshear fits in the defense, but have to believe he's going to be highly sought after, especially given the fact that he's playing a premium position like linebacker right now and given the demand and supply that's available right now in the transfer portal. So Kendrick Blackshear is back on the market after transferring from that winter cycle over to Texas from Bama. Louisville running back Penny Boone. We talked about this yesterday with Pete Nakos. That's a player that also transferred during the winter cycle, was offensive player of the year in the MAC. I mean, just ran it up on Wednesday nights, had over 1,400 yards last season. He transferred from Toledo to Louisville. He's back in the transfer portal. There was some thought that maybe he'd go back to Louisville. Georgia was an option at one point, it looked like. Kentucky looked like they could be an option for him. Pete Nakos has put in a pick for UCF. Now, if he goes to UCF, he's not the lone back. I believe it's R.J. Harvey is also a running back for UCF right now that could help carry the load. So it's not just like you're, you know, the only bell cow, which I think with his NFL aspirations could be attractive. And then also with that offense with K.J. Jefferson, being able to be dynamic on those zone reads and things like that, also taking pressure off the running back, could be a good fit. So Louisville running back Penny Boone has been projected and picked to UCF. We'll keep an eye on that one, but I think that'd be a huge get for the Knights. Top offensive lineman in the transfer portal right now is Jason Zandamela. He transferred from USC. He was at USC, committed out of high school. He was a four-star player in the class of 2024. He has made it very clear he wants to go back to where he's from, which is, of course, the state of Florida. UCF and Florida right now are the two schools to beat. If UCF lands Jason Zandamela over the home state Gators, over, I shouldn't say the home state, they're both home state schools, but over the SEC school in the state, the Gators, that is a flag-planting moment for Gus Malzahn. That is, I think, a major recruiting win for them and should also bolster their efforts going forward in terms of talent acquisition. But if Florida's able to land him, that'd be major in the way that it helps them in the interior of that offensive line trying to run the football in the future. And then at the very worst, you just provide some more depth and you're able to have another body in there that's going to help you over the course of the season. So that's kind of the latest from the portal. Keep an eye on the socials, man. There's a lot going on. Make sure you subscribe to all the On3 accounts. Pete Nakos, Steve Wiltfong, On3 Transfer Portal, On3 Main, like all those things. Stay dialed in. I know the window has closed. That does not mean that the action is over. We're going to cover it all the way through the line here as we do on this show. So also make sure you're subscribed here. We appreciate you in advance for doing that. All right. Let's keep on rolling here. There was an article that came out yesterday from The Athletic, and the story was tracking the players that were cut from last season's Colorado team when Deion Sanders was hired as the head coach there, because it was very, very widely publicized, and the clip was all over social media of Deion Sanders walking in that team room and saying, listen, some of y'all are not going to be here. Some of y'all will not be a part of this team that are currently in this team room. I am bringing my Louis luggage. So he telegraphed it to him. And the response from this article, just from the Twitter sphere, we got a lot of mixed responses, and I want us to unpack them right now. First things first, though, if you're watching on the live show, shout out to y'all. We love you. Make sure you are subscribed. If you want to consume this show via podcast, Apple, Spotify, You type in the hard count with JD Pickell, boom, we're there for you, all right? Any way you want it, that's the way we got you, okay? Make sure you subscribe. We appreciate you for that. Follow me on the socials at JD Pickell as well. So here's the crazy thing about this article. 90-95%, I would have to guess, of the responses on Twitter did not actually read the article, because what they saw was the quote graphic. And I want us to kind of unpack what this quote graphic said, and I'm not going to show the quote graphic because I honestly don't know if we would get sued or not from The Athletic. So here's what the quote graphic entailed. You had two pictures of Deion Sanders, and you had quotes from a former player, Xavier Smith. And the quote reads as follows, quote, "I was actually getting mad, like tears coming to my eyes because, bro, you never even tried to get to know me." And that's him recalling Deion Sanders telling him he should enter the spring transfer portal. The next quote, also from Xavier Smith, also with a picture of Deion Sanders. He says, quote, "He was destroying guys' confidence and belief in themselves. The way he did it could have been done with a little more compassion." Okay? So I got a lot of thoughts on this. Again, people just saw that quote graphic, and they're like, oh my gosh, Deion Sanders is just being a bad guy, cutting these kids, destroying their confidence, and just throwing them by the wayside. And my first reaction when seeing this quote graphic, quite honestly, was like, that sounds like Power 5 college football with adults having their jobs on the line and a roster that was 1-11 a season ago. Sounds like he was trying to get his football team better and they had some players clearly on that roster that weren't going to help in that effort. But again, people did not actually read the article. People just saw that quote, thought they knew what the article said, and ran with it. If you actually read the article, I don't think it paints anybody in a bad light. Both the players that were asked to leave and Deion Sanders himself. Like, there was a lot of other quotes from players that I thought were extremely positive and extremely, I mean, just fair to be real. There was a quote in there that said he wasn't being a jerk about it. He was just straight up wanted to see if we could play. Does that sound like somebody who's lacking compassion to you? There was also a lot of people that took to the Twitter sphere and gave their own experiences of how they interacted with Coach Prime. And basically saying, hey, Deion Sanders called me out and asked me my name, asked me how I was doing. Like, there was a lot of also really positive experiences with Deion Sanders that came to light because of an article like this. But again, the article itself wasn't a hit piece on anybody. It was genuinely tracking these players and what happened to them with life after Colorado. And a lot of these players did not give an emotional response. They were just like, yeah, it is what it is. We understood what he was doing. We understood that we weren't one of his guys that he brought in there. So some of those guys hit the portal on their own accord. A lot of those guys were told, hey, you're not going to play this year. And there was also a quote in there where the player is recounting what Deion Sanders told him. And he said, like, Deion was pretty fair to him. He's like, listen, we need guys to play right now. We need guys that are going to help us in this 2023 season. You're coming off of injury. I don't think this is going to be best for you. Probably should hit the portal. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that? It's not youth football. We're not talking Pop Warner here. We're talking a real deal business that is college football, and we're talking adults with jobs on the line that have to feed their families, and it's hard to do when you're not winning football games. And what they had in-house at Colorado was not a winning product. It just is what it is, man. It's no hard feelings. It just is what it is. And also, here's the thing. Like, the kid with the quotes from that graphic went on to have a really good career this past season at Austin Peay. I think he had an All-American season. It was a freshman All-American season, potentially, at the FCS level. Like, good for him. And here's the thing, like, excuse me. I don't fault the kid either for that response. Like, I think the quote graphic kind of paints him in a bad light, but, like, put yourself in that kid's shoes. You probably would feel the same way. New coach comes in. You're excited to be on scholarship at Colorado. You know, your dreams have finally come true of playing big-time college football, and you get cut. It would be unnatural to not be emotional. It would be unnatural to not feel like it wasn't fair to you. And here's the thing, it probably wasn't fair. But college football is not about fair. Fair isn't what wins you conference championships. Fair isn't what gets you to bowl games. So, like, I don't dunk on Xavier Smith at all in this. I think that quote kind of put it in a bad light, but I don't fault him either. It's just one of those things where, like, man, if you read the article, it's not actually taking shots at anybody. It's just calling a spade here. So that's kind of my take on it. I don't think the folks that have strong opinions on the player or strong opinion on Deion Sanders either way, I don't think they really took the time to unpack the context. Now, then there was the response from Shadur on Twitter. And Shadur tweeted out with a quote from the article. Again, I don't know that Shadur read the article. He might have, but just based on the way that he responded, he said, "I don't even remember him. To be honest, bro had to be very mid at best. Then he goes on Spaces, and him and some teammates kind of chop it up and just talk about, like, hey, listen, we don't need people throwing shade at what we're doing here. We don't need former teammates throwing shade at what we're doing here. Like, we're just, we're trying to keep this thing positive. And, like, I understand that conversation. I might have maybe chosen to not have it on Spaces, but that's just me. But honestly, dude, like, I get this from Shador, too. Is it how I would have done it? Probably not, but I get it. I 100% get it on two fronts. One, that's not just your head coach. That's your dad. That's your dad that folks are, again, not reading the article and then going and taking aim at your dad and the way that he runs things, saying that he's not compassionate, saying that he's not operating with class, saying that he's destroying these kids' confidence in their careers. Like, of course, whether he's your coach or not, you're going to go to the front lines and defend your dad. That's the first thing. The other part is this is your football team. Like, Shador Sanders, as the quarterback and the leader of Colorado, this is his team. He feels some kind of way if you're going to speak down on what they're doing internally at Colorado. They put in hours at Colorado, man, I promise you. They have dedicated their entire college experience to making Colorado football successful. And, yeah, man, like, there's no – again, I probably would not have done it this way on Twitter. I wouldn't have done it this way on Twitter. And the reason why is because if you're a fan of Shador Sanders, I wonder how this is going to be perceived when it comes time for the NFL draft. I want to put a pin in that, and I want to tell you a personal story here really quick. When I was a sophomore in college, I got thrown out of my brother's high school basketball game. Thrown out. The backstory there, my brother gets fouled hard. They don't call it. Happens later in the game. Kid pushes him. They don't call it. I stand up, make a scene. They're like, hey, you're out of here. You can't yell. This is a high school basketball game. Like, you can't make a scene here. Relax. Now, for me, same thing. I'm going to the front line for my brother. I think what happened there is not okay. I'm going to step in. I'm going to make my point. Who cares, though? How does it look from the outside looking in? If someone were trying to, you know, if I were applying for a job and that person were in the room, they're like, what is this dude doing? Why is he making a scene at a high school basketball game? And Spencer Rattler, from what we can tell, just got dragged through the NFL draft because of how he looked as a senior in high school on a Netflix series. The way that this looks is that Shador Sanders is throwing a former teammate under the bus very publicly. So if I'm Shador Sanders, I'm telling, or if I'm someone in Shador Sanders' camp, I'm telling him, like, hey, Shador, take care of Shador Sanders this time next year. I understand you want to go to war for your dad and for your team, but, like, I'm telling you, man, there's a different way for us to do this. Same thing I would have told sophomore in college, JD. Hey, you want to take care of your brother, but maybe don't make a scene at the high school basketball game. So it is what it is. I get it on all fronts. I think actually reading the article was a great article. I thought it was really insightful. I thought they painted everybody in a pretty fair light, from Deion Sanders to the players. And not all the players had a negative experience after Colorado. Some of them, it worked out great. And I think for Colorado, it was what had to be done. Deion Sanders is there to win football games, not to make friends, not to make people feel good, not to go and you know, miss bowl games. Like, he is there to win ball games. And the team they had last year was not good enough. And he told them that. He told them in that meeting room, hey, some of y'all are going to get cut. And then some people got cut. Is it fair? No. Is life fair? Is college football fair? Also no. So that's kind of our two cents on that, man. I understand where people are coming from. I understand that there's some reactions to quote tweets. But again, quote tweets aren't real life. All right? Quote graphics, not real life. So with that, we move on. We move on, man. All right, let's keep it rolling here. I put out a prompt on my Twitter page, as we often do, so make sure you're following me on the social channels there, at JD Pakel, Instagram, Twitter. I said, it is good for college football when blank is good. Another way people interpreted this, college football is better when blank is good. A lot of good responses from y'all. I want to give a disclaimer here. I think college football is a lot like a day on the water. Like, however you want to enjoy it, it's awesome either way. Some people, they want to be on the boat and they want to throw a tube out the back and go tubing. Some people like to jet ski. Some people like to just chill out on the boat and do what you do on the boat. Like, some people want to sit on the bank. Like, it doesn't matter how you enjoy your day on the water. You enjoy it, period. There's no negative way to experience it. Same way I feel about college football. We got a lot of good responses. I see the logic behind a lot of them. But at the end of the day, man, college football is the greatest sport on the planet. When you turn on your television and college game day or big noon is on the TV, like, Life is good. Vibes are high. You're on the water. Sun is shining. It's a good day, all right? We got college football going on in the fall. So as long as that's happening, college football is great. I want us to unpack some of your answers, though, because I think it's an interesting discussion. The first one we got, and this was one that was pretty consistent, was college football is better, or it's good for college football, when the big three in the state of Florida are all relevant, or some people said top 10 or winning, however you want to slice it. For those of y'all that don't know, the big three, Florida State, Florida, Miami. I appreciate this, and I appreciate where this is coming from, because what this does whenever these three schools are relevant, it really checks a box for me that's just a big enjoyment factor when I watch college football, which is seeing healthy rivalries. Because that's one of the things that makes college football unique to any other sport. The rivalries are like next level passionate, in-depth, intense. You see versions of that throughout different points in college, or in I guess other college sports as well, but I mean professional sports. Like, you know, you have rivalries between Patriots and the Bills and Falcons and Panthers. Like, there's some beef there, but it's not the same as college football beef. So, essentially, I enjoy the fact that you get three nationally relevant fan bases, three pretty nationally impactful fan bases, all extremely engaged, all fired up, and all honestly talking more trash than ever before on the socials, because that's one of the things, too. All three of these fan bases are rabid, rabid. And so when you're able to win ball games at a high level, you really are able to engage every single factor of that rabid fan base. Like, you get folks that wouldn't be tuned in when you're 6-6. You get them dialed into what's going on. And I love that. I think that's good for the sport. Turns the volume all the way up and is overall a good thing. Another facet of this, though, when those three schools are operating at a high level, it indirectly, in my opinion, creates the possibility for more parity, because the state of Florida at the high school level is one of the most talent-rich states in America. And so when all those three schools are winning, and I'm a high schooler in the state of Florida, I'm a 4-star, I'm a 5-star, I can stay home and play big-time college football. I don't have to worry about what we're going to be on Saturdays, because you're already winning before I got there. If I go there, I know we're going to keep winning, is how I would look at it. And so when that happens, guess who's not landing some of the top talent in Florida? Or guess who's missing out on some of the top talent in the state of Florida? The schools that typically would feast off that talent. Talk about Alabama, when they were reeling off national championships. Guys like Amari Cooper were a part of those rosters. Okay, Georgia, Texas. They recruit Florida hard for a reason, because there's really freaking good football players there. And so when some of those guys stay home, okay, well now the rosters eventually start to become, in some way, shape, or form, a little bit more even. I'm not saying there's not good football players in Texas or state of California as well, but you do see a little bit more of an even playing field is what I think would happen. And so in that way, some folks love parity in college football. I think it's super fun. The 2007 season is a great example of that. I love it. I love it. So when the big three in the state of Florida are all good is when some folks would say college football is better or it's good for the sport. I see the thought process there. Now, another response we got, excuse me, a couple of times. Some folks said when the Blue Bloods are good is when it's good for college football, or when college football is better. Blue Bloods, I mean, I think some that most folks agree on is Ohio State, Alabama, USC, Notre Dame. Nebraska historically has been a Blue Blood. And from a dollars and cents standpoint, I think this is a very fair answer, because those are the largest fan bases, right? Like, those are the big boys. Those are the ones that are going to be all the way engaged when they start winning ball games, because they got huge alumni networks. And I think when it's to go back to what I was saying about metaphors around what college football is, like, I like my college football the same way I appreciate, like, my barbecues. I like them loud. I like a lot of noise. I like hearing the sizzle of the grill, like the music cranked up. I like a lot of people there. I like conversation. I like that thing to be churning. That's what's happening when the Blue Bloods in college football are winning ball games. And essentially, like, you have the most, again, sizable fan bases, the most engaged, from the social aspects to YouTube to, I mean, whatever. Like, it's fun because it's a lot of engagement. The other part of this, though, that I think is healthy in some ways for college football, and why I see the logic behind this answer, what I appreciate when this is happening, depending on which Blue Bloods it is it engages all regions of the country. Like, if USC were to get back to their winning ways, and we're talking about USC being a college football playoff team, how fun would that be? Because you got the whole West Coast starting to get involved. And that doesn't always happen, right? Because in LA, we all understand this, there's a lot of things to do. You're not watching a USC football game if they're going 6-6, 5-7. Like, it doesn't cut in LA. They got the beach right down the road. So that's an example. But when you have USC good, Michigan good, Texas good, Georgia good, Florida good, like all those things I think help us keep the sport a little less regional, which in my opinion is just fun for college football because you got more people engaged. So that's where I would stand on that. Last year was really fun in that regard because you had Washington good, you had Oregon good. It was arguably one of the best years ever in the Pac-12 before they shut it down. Still miss you. Still miss you, Pac-12. Last thing I'll say here, a caveat to this is when a big brand that was previously starving, like think Tennessee before that 2022 season, and then they have a year like the Vols did in 2022, they experience some success, that just creates some really special moments for us as college football fans, regardless of who you're a fan of. Like, you might have been a Virginia Tech fan, or you might have been a Colorado fan, and you see Tennessee storm the field after beating Alabama, and you see them smoking cigars in that scene that Neyland Stadium was. They're throwing field goal posts in the river to see if they float. Turns out they do not. Like, as a college football fan, it kind of warms your heart a little bit to see those kind of things happen to teams that haven't had success for a while. Now, obviously, the other part of this is there are some folks that are just anti-blue blood, and I see that logic too. I mean, when Cincinnati went on their run to the college football playoff, I thought that was phenomenal for the sport. So there's different angles to approach it from, but overall, the engagement that comes about when blue bloods are playing at a high level, I think that's fun, and I see the logic behind it. And I promise you, the Suits, they love when college football has blue bloods winning. Last thing I'll say here, this is not in the same vein exactly as a team that's winning ball games or a group of teams winning ball games. River Bailey produces Andy Staples on three. So shouts to River. I think he's in the background right now, or he may or may not be in the background. He's usually in the background. Trey Yannity and I were talking about this. I think Nick Brake was in the conversation as well. There was some talk around the office of when there's roster continuity, especially now in college football, I think that's good for the sport as well. Because right now in the transfer portal era, if I'm not playing, I'm out. I'm a five-star, I'm not playing, I'm out. Oh, someone's offering more NIL money, I'm out. And we understand why. And you don't blame the players. You blame the adults that are involved in that. But I think when a player stays and decides to stay on his own accord, when he has options to leave and then has success, same thing I said about blue bloods that were starved having success. I think you like to see those kind of moments for players when they have success. And those kind of senior days, I think, are second to none. And they might become more rare. And in that same way, because they're more rare, that might amplify what we love about them even more. Something very pure and very true to the college football we all grew up on. When a player trots out that tunnel on senior day, carrying the rose, gives it to his mom, and that fan base, that stadium just absolutely erupts. Because they know that kid could have left. That kid probably could have gone somewhere else and played, gone somewhere else and made some more money, gone to the NFL earlier, but he stayed, had success, and gave back to the university. And that way, I think that's how you become a legend at a school. We're going to see that this year with Carson Beck. He could have left. He wasn't playing. Stetson Bennett was playing in front of him. Carson Beck's good enough to play a lot of places. He stayed. He's had success last year. I think he's going to have a massive year this year, spoiler alert. Jackson Dart, I understand he transferred from USC to Ole Miss to begin with. But remember now, this time last year, Ole Miss brought in a couple of quarterbacks to take his job. He could have left. He could have transferred. He stayed, fought for his job, had success. I think his senior day will be really special as well. So I love those things about college football. I'm not telling you one's better than the other. College football is great, period. But it was fun to unpack some of those answers from y'all. A lot of great responses. A lot of great responses from y'all on there. Now, one school that I think is going to have a lot of success in 2024, speaking of those fun senior days, the Oregon Ducks are going to be a Big Ten title and national title contender in 2024. I'm not backing off that statement at all. Big reason because of that will be what they do offensively and their success that they're going to have with their new quarterback, Dylan Gabriel. New weapons like Jay Harris, D2 transfer running back, Evan Stewart out wide. Like, they got some weapons now that are new. I think it's going to be seamless when it comes to their transition from last year to this year. Same offensive coordinator in Will Stein, but let's look at what they did last year in 2023. They were a game away from being a college football playoff team, scored 41 points a game, 5.5 yards of carry on the ground as a team, over 500 yards of total offense a game, number one protection rate in America. Now, the pieces are shifting a little bit. You got new faces playing quarterback, like I just mentioned, but I still think they're going to do numbers like Good Will Hunting in 2024. Currently going through the book Art of War by Sun Tzu, and one of the things that he talks about is you attack your opponent where they're weak. Sounds pretty straightforward, right? Well, that's what the Oregon offense does really effectively, what they're going to continue to do effectively in 2024. This offense is built to attack the perimeter. In my opinion, I don't know this to be true, but I have to believe they attack the perimeter because they want to make those defensive backs, those second-level or third-level players, rather, that are built to cover, come up and tackle a little bit more frequently. And if you can't do that, boom, we're out and about. And then when they attack you on the perimeter, they attack you where you're weak, then you start to overcompensate and you become weak in other places and they attack that as well. So they work to make you weak is what I want to make sure we start with when we talk about this Oregon offense. How do they do it? They have a lot of motions, going to mess with the eyes of the second level of that defense. Tez Johnson coming across the formation. Does he have the ball going this way? Oh, are they going to throw it to him? Oh, wait, running back the other way. So what they do really effectively when they get that movement around pre-snap, they do a great job, as I just mentioned, attacking the perimeter. They do that with horizontal passes. People threw some shade at Bo Nix last year because of how many passes he didn't throw downfield and how he ran that offense really efficiently. I don't know why that was funny to some folks, calling him check down artist or whatever. Like, say what you want. He's a top 15 pick, and Oregon scored over 40 points a game last year. They're going to be in that same vein this year with what Dylan Gabriel does. And then they have plays off of the plays. What I just said a second ago. Yes, they can throw the extended handoff out there to Tez Johnson, but last year it was, you want to worry about Tez Johnson on the perimeter out there? You want to run out there to try and compensate? Well, that means that you have less at that second level when we hand the ball off and we get north and south and we just gashed you for a 30-yard touchdown. That's how they're going to operate the same way this season. And the reason why they're effective in doing that, or their advantage in doing that, is they use tempo to their advantage. They go quickly in terms of how many plays they run, but they also, at the quarterback position, made really quick decisions last year. Like, one of the reasons Bo Nix had that number one protection rate in America in 2023, yeah, the offensive line was great, but Bo Nix wasn't holding that ball for very long. It was catch, know where I'm going with the football, get it out there, put it on the numbers, let's get north and south. That was how they operated last year. And when they go fast, they force you as a defense to be reactionary. Like, I hope you know your playbook. I hope you know your keys for that week, because you're not going to be able to really think and figure out what's going on and let it develop. There is no letting it develop. The ball is snapped. The ball is out. It's developed. They already got the ball to their playmaker in space. Evan Stewart, Tez Johnson, Treshawn Holden, whoever you want to mention there, they're already rolling. And so you better react with them, and you better be right with how you react. Because if you react to something that you think you saw and you're wrong, boom, other play the other way, the play off of the play got you, and you're listening to the Oregon fight song, and it is what it is. So a big reason why they were so successful last year, they had a quarterback who had the physical and mental skill set to run their system. Bo Nix, I just mentioned 77% completion percentage. I believe that's a record. Dylan Gabriel, what he brings to the table. Is he Bo Nix exactly? No, but he brings the same skill set. Physically, yes. Looks a little bit different than Bo Nix size-wise. Physically, same skill set. Mentally, I think he also brings that same skill set. Because the big thing with Dylan Gabriel, and this was a big reason why Dan Lanning and co. brought him in, played a lot of ball. There's no wondering with Dylan Gabriel in that first game in Autzen Stadium when it's loud and it's rocking, it's third down and two and you got to have it. There's no wondering what he has internally. There's no wondering if he's going to have, you know, a little bit of the moment be too big for him. He's played a lot of big-time college football, and that's going to serve him well. Also, he's digested a lot of different playbooks. I understand he played for the same offensive coordinator for most of his career in college with Jeff Lebby, but, I mean, he processes it very quickly. There's no way around that. He's accurate and a good decision maker. 69% completion percentage last year for Oklahoma. They were stretching the ball downfield a little bit more. I'd be surprised if he's not right around that 70% this upcoming season for Oregon. That's high expectations, but that's how good I think they're going to be when it comes to this 2024 campaign. Got an RPO background, and why does that matter? that means he's had to make good decisions throughout his college career. Like in the RPO system, you have all of a half second to decide where you're going with that football. The RPO, a million different color commentators have explained it to you, but I'll do it one more time. Essentially, you are reading that second level defender. If he steps up to play the run, we're throwing it. If he sits back or hesitates too long, we're giving it. So that happens, that mesh point happens where you put the ball in the belly of the running back. That happens in like a millisecond. You got to know pre-snap. You got to know during the snap. Very reactionary kind of offense. Same deal with Oregon's offense and what they're going to ask them to do in that same vein. Worth noting, you had that Bo Nix mobility factor last year, what I like to call supersizing the offense. Dylan Gabriel brings that same thing to the table. Because I just mentioned you got the running back running it, or you could throw it to the wide receiver. Well, now linebackers, they had to worry about Bo Nix last year taking off and running. Same thing with Dylan Gabriel. Supersizing the offense, just adding a little bit extra to what you have to do during the week when you're preparing for the Ducks. Now, that's great to have a quarterback. That's great to have an offense you feel good about running. But at the end of the day, man, that doesn't matter if you don't have skill players that can win for you. And I think Oregon absolutely has that, without a shadow of a doubt. A lot of this offense is built on, when we get you the rock in space, can you make one miss? Most offenses are built that way, but especially Oregon's offense with how much they want to play in space on the perimeter, how much they want to throw those screen passes, that's huge. Tez Johnson, he's proven he can do it. 1,000-yard receiver last year. Evan Stewart has proven in flashes at A&M he can do it. I think you're going to see more of that in 2024 when he's at Oregon. You got two backs that can be stable. I mean, that's a really stable running game this upcoming season with Jordan James. I know you lost Bucky Irvin to the league. Jay Harris looked great in the spring game. All that's to say, whenever you can win when we go ISO, whenever you get the ball at the top of the key as a basketball player and you got one-on-one, you can win that matchup, now we're really humming. Because when we can throw the horizontal pass and defenses are saying, oh, brother, and then we can run the football because there's a lighter box and they're saying, oh, brother, because you're breaking tackles, like that's where this thing really compounds on itself. That's where it snowballs, and that's where Oregon is going to score a lot of points. So to recap it for you here, Oregon, art of war now. They attack you where you're weak. When you compensate because you're weak, you become weak other places, and then Oregon takes advantage of it that way. They're going so quickly that you have to react, and if you react the wrong way, you're going to listen to the fight song. Dylan Gabriel brings a lot of the same skill set that Bo Nix had, played a lot of college football. He also brings the mental skill set, I believe, that Bo Nix had that made that thing hum because of the good decisions that he made. RPO background is massive, massive, massive for that reason. And then when they get it to the skill players, they're going to win. They're going to win. That's got to be good vibes for all the folks in Eugene, knowing that the offense will once again be a wagon. It'll once again be a force to be reckoned with their first year in the Big Ten. So needless to say now, we're buying stock in the Ducks. We'll talk about Ohio State a little bit tomorrow, because as much as Oregon expects to, you know, win the Big Ten and play in the college football playoff, I think Ohio State expects the same thing. They also expect to win a national championship. They've talked about it. National championship or bust is the feeling around Columbus right now. Again, that's for tomorrow. So a little appetizer there. Speaking of appetizers, man, a lot of times you get sliders when you have an appetizer. What are sliders made out of? Beef. What are some of the best beefs in college football? Because Drake and Kendrick right now, for those of y'all that are keeping tabs on the hip-hop world, sending shots back and forth, right? We got Kendrick with like a six-minute diss track that dropped yesterday, talking about all kinds of things. Drake went out and got AI Tupac and AI Snoop Dogg and then put his own verse on there. Like, very clearly are not friends, very clearly have USDA-approved sirloin beef. Got me thinking, man, what are some of the best beefs when it comes to college football? Here's the criteria that this is important. It's not about rivalries. Like, you could put Auburn, Alabama on here, and yeah, of course they have beef. You could put Ohio State, Michigan on here. Obviously, they are not friends. But I'm talking like petty, just we don't like you kind of vibes. Got a couple of really good responses from y'all. Jimbo and Saban feels like one of the most recent examples of some of the best beef we've had in college football. We'll relive that together right now. Nick Saban, I believe, did not know he was being recorded at this point in time. Jumps on the mic and is talking about NIL and is talking about how it's impacting recruiting and says, we lost recruiting last year, Texas A&M, speaking of their 2022 class. And he says, A&M bought every one of their players. And Jimbo Fisher, Texas A&M head coach at the time, in blue jeans, goes to the podium and just lays into Nick Saban. Says, go check on him. Go see how he does things. Go see what he's doing behind closed doors. See if he does everything above board. Says, that's despicable. It's a shame we even have to do this. These kids and their families, like, it got messy real quick, and it was a college football headline in every single sense of the word. They eventually, I think, ended up being more than fine and shook hands, and I think they were, boys again. But that beef that we had for that week or so stretch, that 24-hour stretch even, that was intense. And we were all circling that day where A&M and Alabama would face off on the field once again. Oklahoma and USC, this is a beef that has stood the test of time for the better part of the last several years. And it's not so much between, like, the teams as much. It's not so much between head coaches. It is fan base driven in my mind, because Lincoln Riley goes on record after they lose to Oklahoma State when he's the head coach at Oklahoma. And he's asked point blank, are you going to be the head coach at LSU? He says, no, I will not be the next head coach at LSU. Which, of course, allowed everybody and their mama to believe, all right, so Lincoln Riley is staying at Oklahoma. Well, not more than 48 hours later, I think it was 24 hours later, actually, it gets announced that Lincoln Riley is leaving for USC. So Oklahoma fans, one, just felt like there wasn't a ton of honesty there, probably how they felt. Two, just the fact that it was USC, for the folks in Norman, felt some kind of way. Because USC, from an archetype standpoint, is Hollywood, it's sunshine, it's palm trees, it's eating kale. Like, it's a lot of things that the Oklahoma fan base just does not necessarily identify with. And so USC fans now have had this back and forth with Oklahoma. Colin Cowherd has very much so played a part in that, talking about what Oklahoma won't be compared to what USC will be. So those fan bases going back and forth, stemming from this Lincoln Riley exit from Oklahoma, has made for a very intense timeline on your Twitter sphere. If you tweet something about USC, Oklahoma's in your mentions. You tweet something about Oklahoma, USC in your mentions. It's very awkward because they don't really play each other outside of that national title game several years ago. So the beef there is intriguing, but it's very intense nonetheless. One of the, in my opinion, most intense beefs in college football. Here's an even more recent one. This is one that we got a lot of responses to. Florida State versus the College Football Playoff Committee. You don't need me to relive it, but we will just a little bit. Florida State does not make the College Football Playoff, even though they won all their games and they were the ACC champions. College Football Playoff says, well, your quarterback, one of your best players, arguably your best player, got hurt. We don't necessarily perceive you to be one of the four best teams. So Florida State is saying, well, we won all our games. We checked all the criteria. Why are we not in the dance? The College Football Playoff is saying, well, we don't view you the same as we did previously. Now, my big takeaway with this whole thing was, like, if I'm Florida State, I'm like, okay, you can feel how you want to feel about us, but give us a heads up. Give us a little bit of something we can look at and know that we're not going to make the College Football Playoff and rate us accordingly. Because I think Florida State was like 4 or 5 all the way up until that final ranking. Like, they had a fair amount of confidence, I have to believe, based on what the committee was saying about them in real time, that, okay, we're going to make the committee, or we're going to make that committee's final four, rather. If I'm a Florida State fan, I'm like, drop us to 8, drop us to 7 after that injury. Don't tell us we're a top 4, top 5 team and we have a chance to make it if we know without a shadow of a doubt that's not going to meet the criteria for what we are going forward here. So the College Football Playoff Committee, obviously, and Florida State are not friends by way of the College Football Playoff rankings being aired on ESPN. ESPN's kind of caught some strays from that, but beef nonetheless. Does anybody win with beef? Only when there's diss tracks being dropped and you're on the outside looking in, but regardless, beef nonetheless. Last one I want to get to here. This one is a little bit funny because it's very one-sided, similar to Florida State and the College Football Playoff Committee. Lane Kiffin and Tennessee, make no mistake, man, they got beef. They got very, very real beef because Lane Kiffin takes the job at Tennessee, the youngest head coach in Division I, all of 33 years old. Tennessee is 5-7 the year before. He takes the podium, and he's talking about what they're going to do long-term in Knoxville, as any good head coach would. Lane Kiffin went so far to say, you know, I can't wait to sing Rocky Top all night long after we beat Florida. And that was Tim Tebow's Florida. That didn't happen, but nonetheless, it was a good game. He left Tennessee after 1 year. They go 7-6 his first year, almost beat Alabama, have a 2-win improvement from the year before. He leaves the Tennessee job after 1 year in the middle of the night for the USC job. And I think the USC brand in general just kind of rubs folks in SEC country the wrong way because of what I said about Oklahoma. They think it's Hollywood. They think it's palm trees. They think it's eating kale, as I just mentioned, things that the good folks in Knoxville wouldn't say embodies what they do out there in Knoxville. Students rioted. There was a real deal uproar from Lane Kiffin leaving for Tennessee or leaving Tennessee for the USC job. And we know that there was no love lost because when Ole Miss went and played Tennessee, there were folks, I should have recapped that a little bit better. When Ole Miss from Lane Kiffin, when Lane Kiffin's coaching Ole Miss and they go play Tennessee, folks are hurling projectiles at Lane Kiffin. They are throwing golf balls. A golf ball could do some damage now if you hit him in the right spot. We're throwing mustard bottles. We're throwing anything and everything we can towards the end of the game at Lane Kiffin. Don't think there's any love lost out there in Knoxville for Lane Kiffin. I don't know how Lane Kiffin feels about Tennessee, but promise you, the folks in Knoxville are not welcoming Lane back anytime soon. Beef, beef, beef. So Jimbo and Saban, Oklahoma and USC as fan bases, Florida State and the College Football Playoff Committee, Lane Kiffin and Tennessee, they don't get along. And here's the thing, with us as consumers of this sport, and just to be 100% transparent, someone that talks about this sport every single day of the year, I'm here for the stories. I'm here for the crazy. I'm here for the passion. I'm here for the madness that makes college football the best sport on the face of the planet. And we're glad you're here for it too. Make sure you've liked the video. Make sure you're subscribed. Getting out of one of the best parts of this entire operation. Already some love in the chat for our guy. Nick Brake joining the show. Dezu saying, good luck on your kickball game, Nick. Hey, how about that, man? How we feeling? Let's start there. Big game. Inter-office match. I could have probably listed you on there as beef in the office with our one Garrett Bauer, who's in the background here as well.
No beef. You've said it before. You say I stand on business.
Yeah, you do stand on business.
That's what I stand on.
I have 2 feet, beef. 10 toes, all 10 toes. I love it. Anything? Yeah. Let's start there. Anything with kickball that you want to get off your chest here?
No. I've just been getting ready for the game.
Ice bath last night or no?
I did stretch a lot.
Good.
Just trying to stay good.
Okay. Dynamic warm up probably to start.
Yep. But okay. Walking my dog, I've actually walked 5 miles a day for the last 3 weeks. Is that a good or bad thing? I mean, I feel like that's too much walking.
Yeah, it's a lot of walking. Tell you what though, when you get into those deep postseason runs and we're talking about playoff kickball.
Yeah.
I think that's where you're gonna see the stamina really kick in. If it were me running your strength conditioning program.
Okay. Sounds good. Hey, earlier today someone said in the chat, we need to talk about Cam Coleman's interview with RG3. What's up with that?
Yeah, so Keon Coleman jumped on with there's so many Colemans. It's also we have like Walker White, Walker Howard, Will Howard. Like there's
both of those Colemans caught some we'll catch some Peyton Thorne bombs too. So
yeah, that's true. That's true. That's a good connection. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, I guess both of them are on the receiving end of some Peyton Thorne passes. Yeah. So Keon Coleman, for those that missed it, went on RG3's podcast. And I'll have to go back and watch the full clip. One of the reasons we didn't talk about it today was because I want to get all the context of that podcast. But basically the clip is Keon Coleman saying Georgia was mad they lost and played us and therefore took their anger out from that game that they lost on us at Florida State. And he says Florida State, we were like, we don't care. You played us in the Don't Matter Bowl. If we had been engaged and actually played the game, different result. The way that Keon Coleman said it, he's like, we would have put the spear through him. So I'm assuming Keon Coleman is liking Florida State's odds. It's tough. I mean, it's difficult to unpack a game that's already happened in an alternate reality. It's also tough to unpack that game when the final score was like 60-3 or 63-3. Like, I understand that none of Florida State's players played in that game and all of Georgia's did. But, like, I don't think that's really a winning argument if you're Keon Coleman to talk about a game that you got bodied in and saying, well, if we had played, it would have gone different. It's like, well, you didn't play. Your team lost by 60. I don't know if that's really the hill you want to die on if you're Keon Coleman. So we'll probably unpack that tomorrow with a little bit more depth. But, yeah, it's a tough I understand it. I don't hate it at all if I'm his teammate, but I don't know if I can get behind that thought.
I didn't know it was Keon Coleman in the interview.
Yeah.
The Buffalo Bill.
Your new wide receiver out there.
Yeah, okay, cool. So, yeah, hopefully we do talk about that tomorrow.
Talk about
the new greatest wide receiver in the Bills roster right now.
Buys his coats from, I think, Marshalls during the summertime. <That's awesome. laughs> Gets a nice discount. So financially responsible, Keon Coleman.
He's going to need those. Craig says, hey, JD, you and Nick should make a trip to Nebraska for the Nebraska-Colorado game on September 7th. Are you going to make a bid to be NCAA 25? Saw the appearance in the Oregon hype video last year.
Dude, I would love that. I would love that so much. You and me out there in Lincoln, us, Sean Callahan.
Deion Sanders.
Golly, that would be a good time. That'd
be a
very
good
time. I would love to make that happen. We'll see. That's got to be on the very high on the list of priorities in terms of games we're going to. I see OG Garrett correcting us. Macy's not Marshall's for Keon Macy's. Coleman. Crucial.
There you
very,
go,
very
Gary.
Crucial.
OG Gary, who, by the way, did side with Drake in that beef.
Interesting.
In the chat.
I don't think we're done with that beef. I think Drake's going to send something back. I saw something on Twitter saying that release from Kendrick was a six-minute version of a 19-minute diss track that he had. If you're taking 19 minutes to diss somebody, you hate someone with every fiber of your soul to say disses for 19 minutes straight. At that point, maybe you should just fight. You know, at that point, maybe we should just throw hands. But it is what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know anything about it, but OG Gary sides with Drake.
OG Gary's picking sides. I like it.
JD, this question has been asked by Jared for the last few days. I've been ignoring it because I know you don't really have much interest in it, but he keeps bringing it back. Says, JD, with everything going on with revenue sharing and whatnot, it's time to talk about pro promotion relegation. JD, I don't think it's ever going to happen in college football.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've seen this in my mentions too. So, one, we appreciate the persistence. If that shows us anything, persistence pays. We honor persistence on this show, right? I mean, that's the big takeaway. I'm with you, Nick. I don't know how you have a promotion relegation system in a world where recruiting is your main source of talent acquisition. If we go to free agency and it is strictly based on, you know, the draft, in addition to what I just said about free agency, if it is a little bit more organization gets to pick the players, and if you play poorly, you get a higher draft pick or a better spot, like, that's just overhauling the entirety of what college football has been. So as long as recruiting is your main source of acquiring talent, I don't see how relegation and promotion is going to be a way forward.
Okay. You know, I don't want it to happen. I don't either. As much as I love promotion and relegation, American soccer should have it. They don't. College football probably shouldn't have it.
It's just tough because, like, let's say one team struggles one season and they get relegated, and I'm a five-star mm-hmm. recruit. I was committed there. I'm probably decommitting. I'm probably going somewhere else, and I'm probably going to go. You know, like, it's just a whole different ball game.
Transfer portal makes it not work, which in soccer, if you get relegated, you lose all your good players. But in college football with a transfer portal, it's not a good idea.
Not a good idea. We got time for one more here?
We do. I thought I asked this yesterday, but I must not have. The truth says, JD, what's tougher to watch, USC defense last year or the Iowa offense?
Oh, man. I'm going to say the Iowa offense. And not because I don't love Iowa. Not because I don't love seeing them punt the football. And not because I don't love everything that Iowa stands for. But for me, just the pace of the game is a little bit boring. I'll be transparent. I like seeing offense. I like seeing points scored. I like seeing teams throw bombs. So even if you're a USC fan, take comfort in the fact that you're seeing a good offensive product on the other side of the ball. It's probably not something they will take comfort in. But even so, as a third-party spectator with no stake in the game either side, I like seeing points scored. And also, I like seeing USC's offense go try and match those points. So I would probably rather watch the USC offense, or the USC defense, rather.
Yeah. Hey, good that stuff. Would be fun. Let's get it going. Do they play this year?
Let me double check.
I'm not sure.
I'm still getting acclimated to the new conference schedules. Let's find out if they play this year.
Yeah,
my gut says they don't.
Yeah, I don't think so.
But let's check. Let's check. Let's check. For everyone listening on the podcast,
know?
Thanks for being patient. Let's find out really quickly.
While you're looking, schedules. Jared Stidham says program guy. Jared, you are a program guy.
Sticking
keep up
with it. Yeah, no Iowa USC this year unless they were to meet in the Big Ten championship.
It's gonna happen.
Could happen. Could happen. Nick, hey, good luck tonight.
I thank you.
Good luck tonight. Swing for the fence. Aim small, miss small. Mm-hmm. Don't break a leg because then you can't play. But
that's true.
Metaphorically speaking.
Okay. I'll do all of those things except for the last one.
There we go. Nick Bragg running the show, baby. Same time tomorrow. That's the man making it all happen. We appreciate y'all making it happen. Again, make sure that you are checking us out on all the platforms. So YouTube, if you're watching the live show, this is perfect. We're glad to have you a part of this. Important to also be tuned in on podcast. Take your friend's phone. Have them subscribe to the podcast feed, and good things are happening for all of us. So we appreciate y'all being dialed in. This is phenomenal. We get to fill a full hour-long college football show during the month of May. Some folks have My Girl. We have the month of May with college football. But regardless, we love y'all. We appreciate y'all. We're going to keep this party rolling, and we will see y'all next time.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.